Section 2, Rome and the Rise of Christianity. Voices from the Past. Virgil's masterpiece, the Aeneid, was an epic poem clearly meant to rival the work of Homer. It was also meant to express that the art of ruling was Rome's gift, as seen here. Let others fashion from bronze more lifelike, breathing images, for so they shall, and evoke living faces from marble. Others excel as orators, others track with their instruments the planets circling in heaven and predict when stars will appear. But Romans, never forget that government is your medium. Be this your art, to practice men in the habit of peace, generosity to the conquered, and firmness against aggressors. Aeneid, C. Day Lewis, translator, 1952. One of the most notable characteristics of Roman culture and society is the impact of the Greeks. The emergence of Rome. Indo-European peoples moved into Italy during the period from about 1500 to 1000 BC. The Latins were one such group. These people spoke Latin, which, like Greek, is an Indo-European language. The Latins were herders and farmers who lived in settlements consisting of huts on the tops of Italy's hills. After 800 BC, other people also began settling in Italy, most notably the Greeks and the Etruscans. Roman tradition maintains that early Rome, 753 to 509 BC, was under the control of seven kings, and that two of the last three kings were Etruscans. Historians know for certain that Rome did fall under Etruscan influence during this time. In 509 BC, the Romans overthrew the last Etruscan king and established a republic, a form of government in which the leader is not a monarch and certain citizens have the right to vote. This was the beginning of a new era in Rome's history. Rome's conquest of Italy. At the beginning of the Republic, Rome was surrounded by enemies. For the next 200 years, the city was engaged in almost continuous warfare. By 267 BC, the Romans had overcome the Greeks and completed their conquest of southern Italy. After defeating the remaining Etruscan states to the north over the next 3 years, Rome had conquered virtually all of Italy. To rule Italy, the Romans devised the Roman Confederation. Under this system, Rome allowed some peoples, especially Latins, to have full Roman citizenship. Most of the remaining communities were made allies. They remained free to run their own local affairs, but were required to provide soldiers for Rome. The Romans made it clear that loyal allies could improve their status and even become Roman citizens. The Romans made the conquered peoples feel they had a real stake in Rome's success. Rome conquers the Mediterranean. After their conquest of Italy, the Romans found themselves face to face with a strong power in the Mediterranean, the state of Carthage. Carthage had been founded around 800 BC on the coast of North Africa. The state had created an enormous trading empire in the western Mediterranean. By the 3rd century BC, the Carthaginian Empire included the coast of northern Africa, southern Spain, Sardinia, Corsica, and western Sicily. The presence of the Carthaginians in Sicily, an island close to the Italian coast, made the Romans fearful. The Romans fought three wars with Carthage, beginning in 264 BC. During the Second War, Rome came close to disaster as a result of the victories of Hannibal, Carthage's greatest general. Despite their losses, the Romans refused to give up and created new armies and a navy to carry on the struggle. In 202 BC, the Romans crushed Hannibal's forces, ending the Second War. Carthage lost Spain, which became a Roman province. Rome had become the dominant power in the western Mediterranean. 50 years later, the Romans fought their third and final war with Carthage, completely destroying Carthage in 146 BC. During its wars with Carthage, Rome also battled the Hellenistic states in the eastern Mediterranean. In 148 BC, Macedonia was made a Roman province. 2 years later, Greece was placed under the control of the Roman governor of Macedonia. In 133 BC, Pergamum became Rome's first province in Asia. Rome was now master of the Mediterranean Sea. Reading check. Summarizing. What is the sequence of events that led Rome to become master of the Mediterranean Sea by 133 BC? The Roman state. The Romans had been ruled by kings under the Etruscans. As a result, they distrusted kingship and devised a very different system of government. Early Rome was divided into two groups or orders, the patricians and the plebeians. The patricians were great landowners who became Rome's ruling class. Less wealthy landowners, craftspeople, merchants, and small farmers were part of a larger group called plebeians. Men in both groups were citizens and could vote, but only the patricians could be elected to governmental offices. the government of Rome. The chief executive officers of the Roman Republic were the consuls and praetors. Two consuls, chosen every year, ran the government and led the Roman army into battle. The praetor was in charge of civil law, law as it applied to Roman citizens. As the Romans' territory expanded, another praetor was added to judge cases in which people were non-citizens. The Romans also had a number of officials who had special duties, such as supervising the treasury. The Roman Senate came to hold an especially important position in the Roman Republic. It was a select group of about 300 patricians who served for life. At first, the Senate's only role was to advise government officials. However, the advice of the Senate carried a great deal of weight. By the 3rd century BC, it had the force of law. The Roman Republic had several people's assemblies in addition to the Senate. By far the most important of these was the Centuriate Assembly. The Centuriate Assembly elected the chief officials, such as consuls and praetors, and passed laws. Because it was organized by classes based on wealth, the wealthiest citizens always had a majority. The Council of the Plebs was the assembly for plebeians only, and it came into being as a result of the struggle between the two social orders in Rome. The struggle of the orders. There was often conflict between the patricians and the plebeians in the early Roman Republic. Children of patricians and plebeians were forbidden to marry each other. Plebeians resented this situation, especially since they served in the Roman army that protected the Republic. They thought that they deserved both political and social equality with the patricians. The struggle between the patricians and plebeians dragged on for hundreds of years. Ultimately, it led to success for the plebeians, and the Council of the Plebs was created in 471 BC. New officials, known as tribunes of the plebs, were given the power to protect the plebeians. In the 4th century BC, plebeians were permitted to become consuls. Finally, in 287 BC, the Council of the Plebs received the right to pass laws for all Romans. By 287 BC, all male Roman citizens were supposedly equal under the law. In reality, however, a few wealthy patrician and plebeian families formed a new senatorial ruling class that came to dominate the political offices. The Roman Republic had not become a democracy. Reading check. Explaining. How did the differences between plebeians and patricians prevent Rome from becoming a true democracy? From Republic to Empire. Turning point. After the collapse of Rome's republican institutions and a series of brutal civil wars, Augustus created a new order that began the Roman Empire. Between 509 and 264 BC, most of what is modern-day Italy was unified under Rome's control. Even more dramatic is that by 133 BC, Rome stood supreme over the Mediterranean Sea. Rome's republican institutions, however, proved inadequate for ruling an empire. By the 2nd century BC, the Senate had become the real governing body of the Roman state. Within the Senate, rival factions of wealthy families began to compete for power, creating disorder. In addition, in the 1st century BC, Roman leaders began to recruit armies that swore an oath of loyalty to the general, not to the Roman state. For 50 years, 82 to 31 BC, Roman history was characterized by civil wars as a number of individuals competed for power. In one of these struggles, Julius Caesar defeated the forces led by Pompey. After Caesar was assassinated, Octavian, Caesar's heir and grandnephew, defeated Mark Antony and took control of the Roman world. The period beginning in 31 BC and lasting until AD 14 came to be known as the Age of Augustus. In 27 BC, the Senate had awarded Octavian the title of Augustus, the Revered One. Augustus proved to be highly popular, but his continuing control of the army was the chief source of his power. The Senate named Augustus Imperator, or Commander-in-Chief. Our word emperor comes from the word imperator. Augustus thus became the first emperor of the Roman Empire. Reading check. Summarizing. What factors contributed to disorder and civil war in the Roman Republic during the 2nd and 1st centuries B.C.? The Early Empire. Beginning in AD 14, a series of new emperors ruled Rome. This period, ending in AD 180, is called the Early Empire. The Five Good Emperors. The first four emperors after Augustus grew increasingly more powerful and corrupt. At the beginning of the 2nd century, a series of five so-called good emperors, Nerva, Trajan, Hadrian, Antoninus Pius, and Marcus Aurelius, came to power. These emperors created a period of peace and prosperity known as the Pax Romana, the Roman peace. The Pax Romana lasted for almost 100 years, 96 to 180. These rulers treated the ruling classes with respect, ended arbitrary executions, maintained peace in the empire, and supported domestic policies that were generally helpful to the empire. Under the five good emperors, the powers of the emperor continued to expand at the expense of the Senate. Officials who were appointed and directed by the emperor took over the running of the government. The good emperors also created new programs to help the people. Trajan, for example, created a program that provided state funds to assist poor parents in the raising and education of their children. The good emperors were widely praised for their building programs. Trajan and Hadrian were especially active in building public works, aqueducts, bridges, roads, and harbor facilities throughout the provinces and in Rome. Prosperity and trade. At its height in the 2nd century, the Roman Empire was one of the greatest states the world had ever seen. It covered about 3.5 million square miles, about 9.1 million square kilometers, and had a population that has been estimated at more than 50 million. The early empire was also a period of much prosperity, with internal peace leading to high levels of trade. Merchants from all over the empire came to the chief Italian ports of Puteoli on the Bay of Naples and Ostia at the mouth of the Tiber River. Trade went beyond the Roman frontiers as well and included even silk goods from China. Large quantities of grain were imported, especially from Egypt, to feed the people of Rome. Luxury items poured in to satisfy the wealthy upper classes. Despite the active trade and commerce, however, farming remained the chief occupation of most people and the underlying basis of Roman prosperity. Reading check. Explaining. How did the policies and programs of the five good emperors benefit the early empire and its people? Roman law. One of Rome's chief gifts to the Mediterranean world of its day and later generations was its system of law. Rome's first code of laws was the 12 Tables, which was adopted in 450 BC. This code was a product of a simple farming society and proved inadequate for later Roman needs. From the 12 Tables, the Romans developed a more sophisticated system of civil law. This system applied only to Roman citizens, however. As Rome expanded, legal questions arose that involved both Romans and non-Romans. The Romans found that although some of their rules of civil law could be used in these cases, special rules were often needed. These rules gave rise to a body of law known as the Law of Nations. The Romans came to identify the Law of Nations with natural law, or universal law, based on reason. This enabled them to establish standards of justice that applied to all people. These standards of justice included principles still recognized today. A person was regarded as innocent until proved otherwise. People accused of wrongdoing were allowed to defend themselves before a judge. A judge, in turn, was expected to weigh evidence carefully before arriving at a decision. These principles lived on long after the fall of the Roman Empire. Reading check. Identifying. Name at least two principles in the Law of Nations that are still recognized today. Slavery in the Roman Empire. Slavery was common throughout the ancient world, but no people had more slaves or relied so much on slave labor as the Romans did. Before the 3rd century BC, slaves used in Rome were usually from Italy and were often regarded as part of the family household. The Roman conquest of the Mediterranean brought a drastic change in the use of slaves. Large numbers of foreign peoples who had been captured in different wars were brought back to Italy as slaves. Greek slaves were in much demand as tutors, musicians, doctors, and artists. Roman businessmen would employ them as shop assistants or craftspeople. Many slaves of all nationalities were used as household workers, such as cooks, valets, waiters, cleaners, and gardeners. Slaves built roads and public buildings and farmed the large estates of the wealthy. The conditions under which these slaves lived were often pitiful. One Roman writer argued that it was cheaper to work slaves to death and then replace them than to treat them well. Some slaves revolted. The most famous slave revolt in Italy occurred in 73 BC. Led by the gladiator Spartacus, the revolt broke out in southern Italy and involved 70,000 slaves. Spartacus managed to defeat several Roman armies before being trapped and killed in 71 BC. 6,000 followers of Spartacus were crucified or put to death by nailing to a cross. Reading check. Describing. How did the Roman conquest of the Mediterranean change slavery in the Roman world? Daily life in the city of Rome. At the center of the colossal Roman Empire was the ancient city of Rome. Truly a capital city, Rome had the largest population of any city in the empire, close to 1 million by the time of Augustus. For anyone with ambitions, Rome was the place to be. People from all over the empire resided there. Living conditions. Rome was an overcrowded and noisy city. Because of the congestion, cart and wagon traffic was banned from the streets during the day. An enormous gulf existed between rich and poor. The rich had comfortable villas, while the poor lived in apartment blocks called insulae, which could be 6 stories high. Constructed of concrete walls with wooden beam floors, these buildings were usually poorly built and often collapsed. Fire was a constant threat in the insulae because of the use of movable stoves, torches, candles, and lamps within the rooms for heat and light. Once started, fires were extremely difficult to put out. High rents forced entire families to live in one room. There was no plumbing or central heating. As a result, many poor Romans spent most of their time outdoors in the streets. Public programs. Rome boasted public buildings unequaled anywhere in the empire. Its temples, markets, baths, theaters, governmental buildings, and amphitheaters gave parts of the city an appearance of grandeur and magnificence. Although it was the center of a great empire, Rome had serious problems. Beginning with Augustus, the emperors provided food for the city's poor. About 200,000 people received free grain. Even so, conditions remained grim for the poor. Entertainment was provided on a grand scale for the inhabitants of Rome. Public spectacles were provided by the emperor as part of the great religious festival celebrated by the state. The festivals included 3 major types of entertainment. At the Circus Maximus, horse and chariot races attracted hundreds of thousands. Dramatic performances were held in theaters. The most famous of all the public spectacles, however, were the gladiatorial shows. Reading check. Summarizing. What problems did people face in the ancient city of Rome? Roman culture. The high point of Latin literature was reached in the age of Augustus. The Augustan Age has been called the Golden Age of Latin literature. The most distinguished poet of the Augustan Age was Virgil. The son of a small landholder in northern Italy, near Mantua, he welcomed the rule of Augustus and wrote his greatest work, the Aeneid, in honor of the ruler. In the poem, the character of Aeneas is portrayed as the ideal Roman. His virtues are duty, piety, and faithfulness. Virgil's overall purpose was to show that Aeneas had fulfilled his mission to establish the Romans in Italy and thereby start Rome on its divine mission to rule the world. During the 3rd and 2nd centuries BC, the Romans adopted many features of the Greek style of art. They developed a taste for Greek statues, which they placed not only in public buildings but also in their private houses. While Greek sculptors aimed for an ideal appearance in their figures, Roman sculptors produced realistic statues that included even unpleasant physical details. The Romans excelled in architecture, a highly practical art. Although they continued to use Greek styles such as colonnades and rectangular buildings, the Romans also used forms based on curved lines, the arch, vault, and dome. The Romans were the first people in antiquity to use concrete on a massive scale. Using concrete along with the new architectural forms made it possible for the Romans to construct huge buildings undreamed of by the Greeks. The remarkable engineering skills of the Romans were also used to construct bridges, aqueducts, and roads such as the Appian Way. The Romans built a network of some 50,000 miles or 80,450 kilometers of roads throughout the empire. In Rome, almost a dozen aqueducts kept a population of 1 million supplied with water. The Romans were superb builders. Reading check. Contrasting. Why were the Romans able to construct buildings larger than those of the Greeks? The emergence of Christianity. In Hellenistic times, the Jewish people had been given considerable independence. By AD 6, however, Judea, which embraced the lands of the old Jewish kingdom of Judah, had been made a Roman province and had been placed under the direction of a Roman official called a procurator. Unrest was widespread in Judea because many Jews wanted freedom from the Romans. It was in the midst of the confusion and conflict in Judea that a Jew named Jesus began his public preaching. Jesus proclaimed that through him God was completing the salvation long promised to Israel. "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them." According to Jesus, what was important was not strict adherence to the letter of the law, but the transformation of the inner person. So in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you, for this sums up the law and the prophets. God's command was to love God and one another. Jesus said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength. This is the first commandment. The second is this, love your neighbor as yourself." Jesus voiced the ethical concepts, humility, charity, and love toward others, that would form much of the value system of Western civilization. To some political and religious leaders in Judea, Jesus was a potential revolutionary. His opponents turned him over to the Roman authorities. The procurator Pontius Pilate ordered his crucifixion. Soon after Jesus' death, his loyal followers claimed that Jesus had overcome death and had revealed himself to them. They believed Jesus to be the Messiah, or Anointed One, the long-expected deliverer of Israel. Reading check. Explaining. Why was Jesus turned over to the Roman authorities? The spread of Christianity. Christianity began as a religious movement within Judaism. After the reports that Jesus had overcome death, Christianity spread quickly. According to early Christian accounts, within 60 days there were approximately 10,000 converts to Christianity in the city of Jerusalem alone. Prominent leaders arose in early Christianity. One of these was Simon Peter, a Jewish fisherman who had become a follower of Jesus during Jesus' lifetime. Peter was recognized as the spokesperson for the disciples or followers of Jesus. Another leader was Paul, a highly educated Jewish Roman citizen who joined the movement later. Paul took the message of Jesus to Gentiles, or non-Jews, as well as to Jews. He founded Christian communities, or churches, throughout Asia Minor and along the shores of the Aegean Sea. At the center of Paul's message was the belief that Jesus was the Savior, the Son of God who had come to earth to save humanity. Paul taught that Jesus' death made up for the sins of all people. By accepting Jesus as Christ, from Christos, the Greek term for Messiah, and Savior, people could be saved from sin and reconciled with God. The life of Jesus and his teachings at first were passed on orally to the earliest Christian communities scattered throughout the Mediterranean world. In time, written materials appeared, primarily in the form of letters written by disciples to Christian churches or individuals. Later, between A.D. 70 and 100, the oral accounts about Jesus became the basis of the written Gospels, the good news concerning Jesus. These writings, along with the disciples' letters and recorded teachings, became the basis of the New Testament, the second part of the Christian Bible. By 100, Christian churches had been established in most of the major cities of the Eastern Empire, and in some places in the western part of the empire. Most early Christians came from the Jews and the Greek-speaking populations of the East. In the 2nd and 3rd centuries, however, an increasing number of followers were Latin-speaking people. Many Romans came to view Christians as harmful to the Roman state, because Christians refused to worship the state gods and emperors. The Romans saw the Christians' refusal to do so as an act of treason, punishable by death. The Christians, however, believed there was only one God. To them, the worship of state gods and the emperors meant worshiping false gods and endangering their own salvation. The Roman government began persecuting, or harassing to cause suffering, Christians during the reign of Nero, A.D. 54 to 68. The emperor blamed the Christians for the fire that destroyed much of Rome and subjected them to cruel deaths. In contrast, in the 2nd century, persecution of Christians diminished. By the end of the reigns of the five good emperors, Christians still represented a small minority, though it was one of considerable strength. Reading check. Summarizing. How were the teachings of Jesus preserved and passed on? The triumph of Christianity. Turning point. Under Theodosius the Great, who ruled from 378 to 395, the Romans adopted Christianity as the official religion of the Roman Empire. Though the Romans persecuted Christians in the 1st and 2nd centuries, this did nothing to stop the growth of Christianity. In fact, it did just the opposite, strengthening Christianity in the 2nd and 3rd centuries by forcing it to become more organized. Crucial to this change was the emerging role of the bishops, who began to assume more control over church communities. The Christian church was creating a new structure in which the clergy, or the church leaders, had distinct functions separate from the laity, or the regular church members. Christianity grew quickly in the 1st century, took root in the 2nd, and by the 3rd had spread widely. Why was Christianity able to attract so many followers? First, the Christian message had much to offer the Roman world. Christianity was personal and offered salvation and eternal life to individuals. Christianity gave meaning and purpose to life. Christianity also fulfilled the human need to belong. Christians formed communities bound to one another. In these communities, people could express their love by helping one another and offering assistance to the poor and the sick. Christianity satisfied the need to belong in a way that the huge Roman Empire could never provide. Christianity proved attractive to all classes, but especially to the poor and powerless. Eternal life was promised to all, rich, poor, aristocrats, slaves, men, and women. Christianity stressed a sense of spiritual equality for all people. In the 4th century, Christianity prospered as never before when Constantine became the first Christian emperor. Although he was not baptized until the end of his life, in 313 Constantine issued the Edict of Milan, which proclaimed official tolerance of Christianity. Then, under Theodosius the Great, the Romans adopted Christianity as their official religion. Reading check. Evaluating. What benefits did Christianity offer to individuals and Roman society as a whole? The decline. Marcus Aurelius, the last of the 5 good emperors, died in AD 180. For the next 100 years, a period of civil wars, political disorder, and economic decline almost brought the Roman Empire to its end. At the end of the 3rd and the beginning of the 4th centuries, the Roman Empire gained a new lease on life through the efforts of 2 emperors, Diocletian and Constantine. The empire was changed into a new state, the Late Roman Empire. It included a new governmental structure, a rigid economic and social system, and a new state religion, Christianity. Believing that the empire had grown too large for a single ruler, Diocletian, who ruled from 284 to 305, divided it into 4 units, each with its own ruler. Diocletian's military power still enabled him to claim a higher status and to hold the ultimate authority. Constantine, who ruled from 306 to 337, continued and expanded the policies of Diocletian. Both rulers greatly strengthened and enlarged the administrative bureaucracies of the Roman Empire. A hierarchy of officials exercised control at the various levels of government. The army was enlarged to 500,000 men, including German troops. The political and military reforms of Diocletian and Constantine greatly enlarged 2 institutions, the army and civil service, which drained most of the public funds. More revenues were needed to pay for the army and bureaucracy. The population was not growing, however, so the tax base could not be increased. To ensure the tax base and keep the empire going despite the shortage of labor, the emperors issued edicts that forced people to remain in their designated vocations. Basic jobs such as bakers and shippers became hereditary. By 324, Constantine had emerged as the sole ruler of the empire. Constantine's biggest project was the construction of a new capital city in the east, on the site of the Greek city of Byzantium on the shores of the Bosporus. Calling it his New Rome, Constantine enriched the city with a forum, large palaces, and a vast amphitheater. Eventually renamed Constantinople, the city would become the center of the Eastern Roman Empire and one of the great cities of the world. In general, the economic and social policies of Diocletian and Constantine were based on control and coercion. Although temporarily successful, such policies in the long run stifled the very vitality the late empire needed to revive its sagging fortunes. Reading check. Evaluating. Identify 2 reforms of Diocletian and Constantine. What were the short-term effects of those policies? The fall. The restored empire of Diocletian and Constantine limped along for more than a century. After Constantine, the empire continued to be divided into western and eastern parts. The capital of the Western Roman Empire remained in Rome. Constantinople remained the capital of the Eastern Roman Empire. The Western Roman Empire came under increasing pressure from the invading Germanic tribes. The major breakthrough of invaders into the West came in the second half of the 4th century. The Huns, who came from Asia, moved into Eastern Europe and put pressure on the Germanic Visigoths. The Visigoths, in turn, moved south and west, crossed the Danube River into Roman territory, and settled down as Roman allies. However, the Visigoths soon revolted. The Romans' attempt to stop the revolt at Adrianople in 378 led to a crushing defeat for the Romans. Increasing numbers of Germans now crossed the frontiers. In 410, the Visigoths sacked Rome. Another group, the Vandals, poured into southern Spain and Africa. They crossed into Italy from northern Africa, and in 455, they too sacked Rome. Our modern word Vandal is taken from this tribe. In 476, the Western Emperor, Romulus Augustulus, was deposed by the Germanic head of the army. This is usually taken as the date of the fall of the Western Roman Empire. As we shall see in Chapter 3, a series of German kingdoms replaced the Western Roman Empire. The Eastern Roman Empire, or the Byzantine Empire, however, continued to thrive with its center at Constantinople. Reading check. Identify which groups invaded the Western Roman Empire.